Hey, welcome to episode 122 of the podcast. I just wanted to make a quick apology. Something weird happened with the sound, and I had to use sort of a corrupted file is all we really had to post this week. So there's some weird audio glitches that happen every once in a while where words get contracted or just shrink into nothingness. Unfortunately, this is all we have, but you can get most of the content of what we're talking about throughout with the occasional hiccup. So I hope you enjoy anyway. Thank you. Bye. Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. You are Richard Wally, and you are from Portland, Oregon.
You are Cassidy Robinson, and you're recording from Garden Grove.
Yes. Yes, I am. And today we're doing a tech podcast. We've given up on movies.
Yeah, we realize that there's no money in reviewing them, and we've repented of our ways. Going on to the capitalist society that we are.
So we're going to discuss the new Logitech wireless mic. No, joking.
Please.
that conversation would end quite soon. So this last weekend was the Academy Awards, and I think we went to our respective Academy Awards parties.
Yeah, of course, of course. I mean, I can't remember when you asked me, but I've done things.
Right. So. You met Mike Mignola, didn't you?
Oh, I did that as well. I was going to start off about how I made a lovely vegan basil sauce for some gnocchi pasta this week. But you don't like to hear about my culinary feats. So
no, this isn't a food podcast either. Not officially.
I try to make it every once in a while, but... no, yeah, I did Mignola. This is the second time. It was at Tifa. It's a bigger comic book shop here in Portland. And the first time I met him, I was really starstruck. This time I wasn't as bad. I talked to him like a human being.
Oh, I thought so that wasn't a thing for you. I thought you were too cool for school. You didn't get nervous around famous people.
I thought so until I met like people like I really revered.
Yeah.
So like Neil Gaiman, I was really bad with, like, I almost like it was embarrassing. And writers in general, I sometimes do. And I'm sure that there's some directors, but yeah, like stars. Yeah, no, they're just like dudes. And I'm like, I don't give a shit. But then
for the listeners who may not know, Mike Mignola is the creator and writer of the Hellboy comic book. You've been reading Hellboy pretty much, you know, pre-movies. Okay, so how was your Oscar party? Did you have a lot of people over, or do you go to somebody else's?
Oh, we went to somebody else's. We don't
you don't like
guests. We have like four chairs, so it was like, yeah, and we don't like
that's what floor space is for.
Yeah, but once you get past that like 24, 25 hump, you kind of like realize it's a little lame, but
yeah.
Especially in a small apartment where you're all sitting like shoulder to shoulder. If you have some space to like kind of like, you know, like lay out, it's one thing, but we don't. So it's like, let's play sardines. But no. Yeah, we went to a friend's house and we did the whole bingo /
fill out your own ballot thing.
Yeah. And
snacks.
Yeah. Snacks all over the place. That's a typical Oscar party.
Right. Right. We are going to get to the movies this week. We watched The Kingsman. We talked a little bit about that last week, and we actually were able to see it, so we are going to review that. And we're going to get to our Netflix homework, finally, Detention. You asked me over via text message how well I did on my predictions, the Oscar predictions, and I said that I did Pretty well. I don't know. I thought I could have done better, but I got 14 out of 24 categories correct. What was your number?
I think I only got like 8.
Really?
Yeah, okay, here's the thing, though, is like there were a couple of them that like I totally like I didn't have my ballot at the time because they were still entering in the my choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally was like, oh, I picked that one. Great. And then I got my ballot back and I was like, I didn't pick that one. Why am I being an asshole? Why did I choose that?
Why am I so wrong all the time? Why did I do that?
I knew what they were going to pick on that one. So why
you were voting with your heart, not with your mind.
I tend to do that. And it's always bad because it's wrong.
Mm-hmm. If you have money in on it or someone's going to come break your kneecaps if you're wrong. But seeing as it's all for fun.
We had $5.
You lost $5.
I lost $5.
I bet that hurt.
It not really.
Hurt right in the wallet.
There were quite a few, though, I was off because I really did think that the Oscars were going to pick these ones. But
mm-hmm. We're going to get into it a little bit. This is basically our pet topic, so we're not going to have an official one later. But I kind of wanted to talk about the ceremony itself. Let's start with NPH, Neil Patrick Harris. What did you think?
Overall, really good. I thought he was funny, great delivery.
Yeah.
Slightly, like, it seemed like people were, like, slightly offended by his joke.
A little acerbic. Like, yeah, more so than you would expect from Neil Patrick Harris. You expect kind of, like, I kind of thought it would be basically, like, last year with Ellen, it was kind of a safe pick, but sort of, like, you knew what he's capable of.
Uh-huh.
And it was more or less like that, but, yeah, he had a few jabs in there. He totally pointed out the Hollywood racism thing, like, almost right off the bat. He did this big long number, this big song and dance number. Jack Black comes on stage and does this whole segment about how sequelitis is ruining Hollywood. And
he even did self-deprecating, like he made fun of Smurfs 2 and a few other things.
You can expect that a little bit, but you know, when he talked to David Oyelowo, and then you know everyone applauded him and it was like, oh yeah, now they like you. So there was a few like kind of like Ricky Gervais-ish type things he was able to get away with.
Right, right.
I thought, you know, he balanced it pretty well. It never crossed the line in being like, whoa, Neil Patrick Harris, like, slow your roll.
Agreed. I mean, overall, it was kind of good. But I've got to admit, for some reason, I thought it was a little lackluster.
It was. There was something about the energy overall. It wasn't nothing wrong with the... with the jokes or the delivery or, I mean, he had this whole running gag through it, this magic trick of having this briefcase with his Oscar predictions in it. And then it kind of revealed this kind of hokey joke about, like, you know, different things that happened during the actual ceremony.
It was a magic trick.
But it doesn't really play like a magic trick because we've been cutting away all night. So unless you were actually watching the live feed on your phone, it really doesn't. It doesn't play like that, and it's more just a gag.
Well, I think it was it was supposed to be an interactive feature that people could be doing that.
Yeah, but... and I think they were expecting too much out of people. They should have had, like, a little window, like a Skype window or something at the bottom of the screen of just the briefcase, just so that the trick played a little bit better. But other than that, I think that, you know, the material was fine, but there was kind of this sort of lull. And there felt like it was a little too much space between things. Like, unfortunately, it's a live telecast, so you can't edit. But it felt like that's what it needed. It was just a tighter edit.
Again, like you said, it wasn't the host. I couldn't put my finger on it, like, because it wasn't him. But I was like, why is this? And it seemed like some people were kind of like, I don't know, almost disinterested.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't
like it
say
was a tough crowd too. Like there wasn't a you weren't able to know this from where you are, but it rained like hardcore yesterday, which is weird for Los Angeles and Southern California in general. It rains not often. It has rained a little bit more this winter because it's an El Nino year.
Sure.
I don't think anyone was expecting that. So I think that might have dampened the energy.
Maybe
people, I know they had to like canopy the red carpet and that kind of stuff. And we were having actual trouble at the Oscar party I was at, because the satellite was like fritzing out. So for like the first like 30 minutes.
So people in California can't deal with a little bit of rain. Is that what you're telling me?
Basically, you should drive on the road when it's just like sprinkling. when people are sliding all over the place, like it's ice. it kept pixelating and stuff, and like the host had to keep standing next to the antenna so it wouldn't do that. And then finally he was able to fix it so he didn't have to stand there all night. But was there any, as far as the actual awards go, was there any big upsets, any surprises?
I thought the, first of all, Julianne Moore, I didn't even like, I know I saw her name on there, but I didn't realize what she was
nominated for
or even anything about the movie. So that was a little bit of a weird one for me.
I got that one. I knew about that one because I had other podcasts that I follow, and I pay attention to the Guild Awards, and she's already been winning for that role.
Also, I think Rosamund Pike just should have.
I think she should have won. I love that she was nominated. Unfortunately, it was like the only thing Gone Girl was nominated for. I think it should have been also nominated for picture and score and screenplay, but or direction.
At least something. It was pretty amazing.
But I hope that she was going to win that, but I figured she wouldn't just because of the subject matter.
And then who was the other one?
Like, I knew Dan Gilroy wouldn't win for best original screenplay for Nightcrawler.
Oh yeah, that was upsetting, but I already knew.
Yeah,
like I was like, okay.
I think the biggest upset, and the biggest surprise, I was genuinely shocked. Not much of it shocked me at all. I was pretty, even when I lost, I was like, that would have been my second choice. I was really surprised that Michael Keaton didn't win for best actor.
Yeah, that was the other one that I was like, oh, really? Yeah. I mean, Eddie Redmayne did fine and everything.
He was really good, but here was my logic, because a lot of people did pick Redmayne and they were right. The people in my party. But my logic was Redmayne's young. He has plenty of years in his life to get one of these at some point, and he hasn't totally earned it yet. This is his first breakout. Whereas Michael Keaton, when is this ever going to happen for him again? So surely they'll... Nope, I was wrong.
Yeah, no, they don't like that Michael Keaton fellow.
Well, they liked him enough to nominate him. And Birdman swept everything, basically.
Even the things that I was a little like, really? Okay, I guess, sure, go on. But
I think for cinematography, I picked somebody else, too. Yeah, I picked Robert Yeoman for Grand Budapest Hotel, because I didn't think they would give it to Emmanuel Lubezki 2 years in a row. But again, I was wrong.
I picked Birdman for that one.
Yeah, I mean, the cinematography is amazing.
I got all the shorts and all that kind of stuff. I pretty much bombed.
I did too, because I haven't seen any of them this year. Mm. And that's where I usually always suck, is in the shorts categories and in the some of the tech stuff. This year I did pretty well on the tech. I was glad to see how many awards Grand Budapest Hotel actually won.
Agreed.
I feel like Wes Anderson's getting closer and closer for it happening for him. it seems like every movie he makes, as long as he keeps making good movies like this, he could possibly work his way up to the Oscar. But, it was a long haul. He has kind of a sensibility that you either love or hate, and I feel like people are just now kind of growing into him.
Right.
I don't know. Anything else that was a big surprise?
Not really. It was a pretty safe-ish year.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we should discount the fact that Birdman won as much as it did. Now, it wouldn't have been my first choice for Best Picture. I mean, I would have even preferred Boyhood to win, which up until the Guild Awards, I thought it was going to. But I think Boyhood just came out so long ago that it peaked early. But Birdman, not my favorite movie of the year. And not without its problems, but it's a out there, oddball, weirdo movie. And the fact that it did as well as it did, is really cool, because it's the type of movie that, at the point of time when like movies like the English Patient and Shakespeare in Love were the type of movies that won Oscars, I would have never thought a movie like as experimental as Birdman would have even gotten nominated, let alone win.
Right. No, I can see your point. I didn't really, it definitely wasn't one of my top choices, and actually I thought it was kind of lackluster.
I've seen it a couple times since. I watched it with Keith and Ashley when I went back home for Christmas. They hadn't seen it yet, so we went and saw it. And then we just watched it again for my film reviewing class. And actually, it's grown on me a little bit more. I've been able to read certain things into it that helped me appreciate it more. Like I said, it still wouldn't have cracked my top 10, but I think it's not solid. Quite as surfacey as I originally read it as being.
Mine's not even necessarily. Like, I think all the individual pieces are fine. It's just as a whole, there's something that's just kind of like missing about it. It's just something kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just because it is kind of a weird jumble of a movie, like on purposely jumbly.
Yeah.
But it just kind of lacked something. And also, I think I was actually primed in kind of a bad way because everybody kept talking about the superhero angle. And I don't think that that's really. I think that that's a thing.
I think that informs milieu of the movie, but it's not really what the movie's about. But I would say you should rent it and watch it again because I definitely enjoyed it way more the second time.
Well, I felt the same way about Grand Budapest. The first time I think I was trying to read too much into it. And the second time I just kind of sat down and watched it and I was like, this is pretty lovely. It's just a fun, fun ride. Yeah. And so,
there was a lot of, political speeches.
Yeah.
Everybody seemed to have a cause. And everyone had a different cause. And I have a little bit of an opinion about this. What do you think?
I don't have that much of an opinion. I was just like, oh, okay. We're going to talk about another thing. That's cool.
Right.
Okay, cool.
My opinion.
Like, I mean, nothing I was necessarily offended by. I was just
it's not that kind of thing. I think, you know, they're all wonderful causes. Obviously, Eddie Redmayne talked about ALS and did a shout out for that. He was kind of beside himself because I think he was as shocked as everybody else that he won.
Oh yeah, when he went up on the stage, his face looked like
it's always, even if that isn't who I would have picked or whatever, it's always nice to see someone genuinely care. Unlike Meryl Streep, who wins, she's like, thanks, another one of these.
Throw it in the pile.
Yeah. I'll use it as a paperweight. Patricia Arquette was talking about equal wages, which some people think may have to do with the Sony leak about how, you know, the different gender wage difference in at Hollywood actresses versus actors. Maybe, maybe not. And then the winner I can't think of the name of the movie now. The Imitation Game, the writer of The Imitation Game. Kind of had a weird sort of coded speech, which seemed like he was talking about LGBT acceptance in like high schools and like kind of a it gets better speech. But then it came out just today after everyone assumed the same thing that he's saying that he's not gay. So
what? I thought what?
Right.
No.
We'll just leave that there.
I'm not saying like, no, I thought I we can cut this out if we need to, but like I thought he completely, because I watched an actors roundtable or writers roundtable. That's the one.
Yeah.
And I thought he completely said he was. So that's the only reason I'm confused.
Oh, well, I don't know. Yeah, it's Hollywood. Maybe he's doing takebacks.
Or maybe he's just, you know, he can't decide, you know, so that's OK. There's nothing wrong with that either.
Well, OK. There was a lot of the Inuritu talked about immigration. It seemed like everybody had their own cause, and obviously there was I would say the biggest moment of the Oscars. You know, if you really want to whittle it down, it's not even for a movie that I specifically loved, but I'd say it was the biggest emotional moment of the Oscars was when they performed that song for Glory.
Oh yeah.
And it didn't feel like kind of self-congratulatory and masturbatory in that kind of pageantry Oscar way. It really felt kind of real, and there was like people in the audience like bawling their eyes out, people you wouldn't expect, like Chris Pine.
Yeah. I don't know why that's funny to me right now,
because it's Chris Pine.
Well, I was just he was there. I was like, why is Chris Pine there? Nobody else. I know he did like the
introduction. He was in Into the Woods.
Oh, okay.
I think he might have been there for that because they were up for a few awards.
Okay, fair enough.
But yeah, I think that was definitely the Oscar moment. And there was a few pretty good moments. I thought a lot of the performances were great. Everything is...
Maybe the most pointed, too, because...
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't go into that either.
Well, this is the decoding episode. That's, you know, there was all this talk about, you know, the racial snub of, you know, DuVernay and all this stuff. And you know, I think that, you know, even if they didn't win the Oscar, they kind of did. I think because people are going to remember that a lot more than they're going to remember something like The Theory of Everything.
And to me, it was less about the actual Oscar and the win and everything like that. And it was more about
the moment.
It was about the moment and about the hey, Hollywood, this isn't right. Just about Selma, just the Selma movie. This is about, you know, Hollywood is a bigger whole. It doesn't have to just be gangbangers. Who
right.
Like that? That's not the only roles that should be out there. And I mean, I'm not even like a huge like every, you know, we need to gender and identity swap every and race swap every single character. But it's just like maybe if each person did one, just like one character that was, you know, a different race or gender or whatever, it would probably change things up just enough, and it would equal out. And so that's kind of what I thought, and just. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, a lot of, like I said, a lot of the other performances were cool. I thought actually the Sound of Music thing with Lady Gaga, like, kind of surprised me. I didn't know she had that tool in her toolbox.
You mean she just gave a straight up performance? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing big or gaudy about her performance either. Mm-hmm. I did get a little bit weird about the, who doesn't like at least like Julie Andrews a little bit.
I agree.
I was like, and, oh, Mary Poppins. I was excited.
I mean, I know you have like a weird Mary Poppins thing, but yeah.
It's not a weird Mary Poppins thing. I love Mary Poppins. There's nothing wrong with that.
Not necessarily, no. I thought the everything is awesome.
Are you implying that it's a deviant thing? Because it's not a deviant thing. I love Mary Poppins. Unironically, I love it.
You just do you, okay? but yeah, so that was the Oscars. It happened. We'll forget everything about it in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Birdman won Best Picture. I still think, you know, again, not my choice. I would have liked to have seen Boyhood.
Well, obviously, we did our top 10, and most of these films weren't and are even breaking our top 10.
So. No, a lot of them weren't. But you know, I would say a fair crop. There's nothing in there that I would say is a definite stinker. There's nothing like there, like in like The Help or like The Blind Side, where I'm just confused why it's even in there. But meh, whatever.
That was quite an ending.
Big exclamation point. Your $5.
It's well, technically 10.
Oh, you both put in. Okay. Oh, yeah. All right.
Everybody puts in. I was sad.
All right. Let's get into the movie reviews. We're gonna go into The Kingsman. Like I said at the beginning of the show, we sort of talked about how we were a little sad to have missed it. But then we heard so many good things about it that it piqued our interest. It piqued my curiosity anyway. All these kind of things I've been hearing about it sort of peripherally. And I try not to read reviews and I try not to kind of know what it is before I was going in. And for this movie in particular, I'm glad that I didn't. So this is the new film by Matthew Vaughn, who previously is probably most well-known for doing X-Men First Class, which was something of a soft reboot of that franchise that a lot of people besides myself really liked.
Stardust.
Stardust. Oh, that's a movie I forgot he did, but that is a good one. Fun one. Yeah. And Kick-Ass, which I would say is kind of the closest cousin to what we're seeing here.
Agreed. Yeah, that makes sense.
And before all of that, he kind of came out of the Guy Ritchie school with the film Layer Cake, which Ritchie produced.
Well, he was his producer, and he did Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels with him, and Snatch, and so...
So he's part of that that class, that sort of English post-Tarantino thing.
Mm-hmm.
So what this movie's about is it's sort of almost like an X-Men First Class-ish type thing. Meets a little bit of Men in Black and James Bond. But basically, there's this secret organization of spy network in England known as the Kingsmen, who hide in a tailor shop, a suit shop. And there's this bad guy played by Samuel L. Jackson, going full Samuel L. Jackson in this movie. And Colin Firth had saved the life of this boy's father when he was younger, and then he kind of goes back to check on this kid when the shit starts hitting the fan. And this kid's kind of become sort of a troubled teen of sorts, and he keeps getting into fights, and he was in the military but for a little while, but got kicked out, and now he's kind of become sort of this sort of runaway type. And he tries to recruit him in because he sees the potential that nobody else does, and he goes into the process of trying to become the best of the best of the best to become the super spy and take down Samuel Jackson, who has this weird plan involving computer chips and cell phones. And that description doesn't sound that exciting, and it really doesn't do this movie justice, because it's not necessarily what the movie's about or what the movie is doing plot-wise that's exciting, so much as how it's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can credit whatever you decide to love or hate in this movie 100% to Matthew Vaughn, because this is Matthew Vaughn fully uncorked and unfiltered.
Well, that's something that really stood out to me right away. I actually, again, I avoided reviews, all that kind of thing, and I didn't even like look at the page. I just had kind of peripherally heard, oh, it's kind of the buzz. And I didn't know it was rated R.
Oh boy, is it.
That punched me right in the face in a good way. I was like, ooh. I mean, honestly, there were films last year that I saw that were decent films all aside, except I felt like they needed to be R-rated and have a little bit more of a punch to them. Mm-hmm. This film really benefited from it. And it's almost like when you haven't eaten something for a while and you try it, and it's so good because you haven't had it for so long. That's what this type of rated R was like. I haven't had this action adventure comedy freaking rated R-ness for a while. So
yeah. And in a movie that so easily didn't have to be that, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
this is the type of movie that usually is focus group to death if it's done, you know, within the Hollywood system, like totally 100%. And I maybe, you know, this wasn't a low budget film by any means. But I'm not 100% sure how he was able to make this movie the way he was able to make it. I don't know if he had to hide it in a birthday cake or something until, you know, right before release. But there's stuff in this movie, and I don't want to give away a lot of it, because I think part of the fun of the movie is the surprise.
Well, I think you can talk coded for people who have seen it too. Like, you can say, for example, the church scene, and that doesn't really do anything, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the body count is ridiculous. It is insane.
But wonderful.
Wonderful, yeah.
Wonderfully ridiculous. There we go.
But there's nothing politically correct in this movie, and there's nothing safe or calculated. It is, you know, it does not give a fuck. A single solitary fuck about what you think.
That's
in the
kind of nice, though.
No, yes, that is. I think this. That's why I care about this movie. I think it. You know, like I said, plot wise, it feels a little rehashed. It feels a lot like X-Men First Class. It feels a lot like James Bond in parts. It feels a lot like Men in Black in parts.
Well, okay. But here's my take, though. My take is it is like literally a James Bond film. But, like, he really modernized it. It's taking it and playing with those tropes.
Right. And it obviously knows it's doing that. It makes a lot of meta references to you know, least of all having Michael Caine in the movie and those kind of things. But it's just a blast. I just had so much fun.
Right? Yeah.
And it's kind of long. It's like 2 hours and 9 minutes. And I would think that for the type of movie that it is, that's probably too long. But it actually uses its time very well. And you get invested in the characters. And it's funny. It's like actually funny, not like wink, wink, nod, nod, like, or kind of cringeworthy funny, like I thought a lot of First Class was. But I enjoyed this movie thoroughly.
No,
I can see that there will be people who will hate this movie.
I don't know if I really care. I think there was a lot of great performances too, and I liked where they were coming from. Like, let's go back to Samuel L. Jackson, because it is full Samuel L. Jackson, but they do one really clever thing, I think, with his character, to make him have a weird, I mean, besides his idiosyncrasies, which are really funny, the lisp. I thought the lisp was a really easy way to just tweak and play with his sense of him as a character. Well, not even, I'm not even going to say masculinity, because what I'm going to say is just like, because people, because when he talks in full Samuel L. Jackson voice, you have a certain like authority. Whereas taking away that authority a little bit does change the character and how he's perceived and what's happening. And so I thought it was, I thought that was really cool. What about,
I think Colin Firth and Mark Strong are really good in the movie.
Agreed.
And they both get a lot to do, and they both get to, you know, I mean, you know, that we've seen a lot from these people recently, but I think that they're here again, here's a movie that they could have just had these nothing roles or just been very functional in the movie, but they actually have a lot of personality and you really care about them.
Mm-hmm.
Especially Mark Strong, who's kind of, you know, he usually plays the villain or he plays like kind of the disapproving guy or whatever. And he's kind of that here, but I think that he gets to, you know, he's essentially a butler type, like a Q type, but he's, you know, he injects so much life into it.
No, he's definitely a Q type, but like,
yeah,
it's really later in the film. And you also, I don't know, there is kind of a pathos here to the film though. I mean, besides pathos, there is also, there's an ethos as well to this film, because there is definitely a social standing and class status. And
yeah,
it has,
it is very distinctly English in that way.
Yeah.
Our main character, like I said, he's sort of on the dole, and he's, I guess what you would consider sort of a chav type, English, urban youth.
I think it plays in America though as well, just as easily. Well,
yeah, it translates obviously, but I think that if you know specifically about the English class system,
I think how
where you go to school ends up kind of determining the rest of your life in a way that that's not necessarily the case in America. That informs a lot of what's going on, especially as like his main nemesis is like this kind of Ivy Leaguer and blah blah blah.
Well, I think we do have that in America. I just think that it's a coded system, so it just
it's not as understood, I guess, here.
It's not as straightforward as their class system because it came after, but it comes from the same tree.
But I would say that if I had one issue with the movie, and I like it immensely. Best movie of the year so far, in my opinion. But if I had an issue with the movie, it's that this main character kid, who now I can't find. Eggsy is the name of the character, and he's played by Taron Egerton.
Mm-hmm.
A little underwhelming as a main character. He doesn't ruin the movie. He's not a bad actor. He doesn't have a ton of charisma, and I think his character has to make this kind of big transition, and that it's a transition I don't super buy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some lines that he maybe could have sold a little better. I think if you had a character actor in here that was a little stronger of a comedian,
mm-hmm.
on top of being able to do the physical stuff, he does like parkour and whatever. I don't know. It probably was body doubled. Who knows? But I think somebody who had a little bit more expression maybe could have been a more engaging main character. But But that's a minor quibble for what I think's a pretty terrific movie.
Yeah, I can kind of see what you're saying. I probably didn't have as much of a problem with it as you did. I thought it was pretty decent. I can see that he didn't necessarily give some of his more comedic lines as much punch as it needed. But I think the physicality and the
you bought him as a hood.
I bought him as what he was supposed to be, right?
Yeah. But
there were other scenes that I think he could have definitely could have been done a little better. But by no means, I don't even think it's distracting or anything. I think where it's at. I could have seen a little bit more from there's a female character who kind of gets pushed to the side. I can't remember her name, but it's his little counterpart that goes through with him. His Hermione in Spy School. she could have, I think she could have been punched up a little bit too. And it's not the actress's fault or even, I mean, time wise too, it was kind of, but I would like to see more from her if it goes anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. There's some clever plotting that happens in this movie. And there's a few places in the movie, a few times, when I really thought one thing was going to happen and it goes the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Or they really pull the rug out from under me in a really satisfying way. Not like a twist where, oh, they've been dead the whole time or whatever. You know, nothing crazy like that. But just good, clever story writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a type of thing that, again, one of these type of movies, if this had been like a Disney Bruckheimer event, which very easily could have been, it could have just been so bland and watered down and by the numbers, and it is anything but.
It's definitely not sanitized or whitewashed. That's a boon to it. I feel like somebody who's been traveling for the desert for a long time and finally got a great drink of water.
This would have been very, I think this almost kind of feels like the type of movie you would have got in like the 70s and 80s. More specifically, I think the 80s, that kind of action adventure thing but it was appealing to kids, but not necessarily only for kids.
But I mean, it's very modern. No, there is a lot to say about this film, and I think that people should check it out. I guess my mm-hmm. disclaimers would be it is full R.
It goes there. It's totally unhinged.
If you don't sometimes like them making very specific jokes, mm-hmm. maybe you shouldn't. It can be pretty juvenile, but I think in a fun way. I rolled my eyes at a certain scene that's being debated somewhat. I think it's kind of a marketing scheme, but...
the movie is just, like I said, there's nothing about this movie that is apologizing for anything. It's not pulling back any of its punches. And so...
And this isn't a spoiler, but her prosthetics are pretty fucking sweet.
I guess I don't know what you're talking about.
Her prosthetics?
Oh, that isn't a spoiler. Yeah, there's like a Bondish villain who has like razor blade legs.
It's awesome, man.
And it's awesome.
It's like, awesome, man.
It's amazing.
This is like a teenage movie, kind of, but like not. I don't know. It's
oh yeah. I think the 14-year-old me would have like wouldn't have been able to peel his pants off of his sticky body.
That's so gross. Please don't say
that. Put that on the DVD.
Please don't say that ever again.
If you stare at this thing long enough, it isn't necessarily a masterpiece. I think the movie's not quite as sharply satirical as it thinks it's being sometimes. But I think what it makes up for there is good storytelling, good plotting, really, really well done set pieces and choreography. I was going to look it up and I didn't, but I was wondering if it was the same fight choreographer that Edgar Wright has been using, because it had that kind of energy to the fisticuffs.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
But I didn't. I'm lazy, so I didn't look it up. Yeah, so I would say I think people should go see this.
Oh, I
don't know if they are, but they should.
They should. This is definitely a better alternative than 50 Shades.
I think that it's a good time in the theater. It accompanies your popcorn very well, and even if it doesn't, end up getting discovered now, I could definitely see it becoming a cult thing in the future.
Oh yeah, it's tons of fun. I don't know.
Yeah.
You couldn't I do know reasons that I've already stated, but what I'm saying is, in general, I think most people enjoy it.
Okay, let's go ahead and do our Netflix homework, which we didn't get to last week, but I finally was able to catch up with Detention. Why don't you try and describe that to me?
Yeah, so it's kind of it exists in one of those bizarro kind of like John who dies at the end kind of worlds. Mm. However, it kind of starts out with this kind of mean girl, and it kind of goes on from there. And then you get kind of the dweeby friend, and it becomes much more about her. And basically, they're trying to figure out high school and navigate space and time and monsters and killings. And then they end up serving detention. But the film definitely exists in that kind of weird
hybrid genre world.
Hybrid yeah. genre horror, specifically, I think, is the main emphasis of it. Okay. How do I get into this? At first, I wasn't sure how into the film I was. But as Fair it enough. Went on, and I started just kind of getting it, just being like, okay, I actually started to enjoy myself more. As the film went on. However, I still, I don't know, I cautiously would recommend it to a certain crowd. If you liked John Who Dies at the End, then yes, maybe you dig this, maybe anything like things like that. But this is another thing with a very young cast, and there's a lot of them that I don't think necessarily deliver like the best performances.
Fair enough.
It's specifically where that... is a hindrance is kind of comedic timing, which this really kind of hinged on.
Quick comedic timing too. That's it's not, you know, none of that loosey goosey Apatow stuff. This is like punchline, 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 punchline all the way through.
Yeah, it did. Maybe that could have been a thing as well, as maybe somebody with a little bit better comedic timing for the script, but I'm not sure, because I think that, the person who directed it did write it as well. So it's sort of a strange thing, but I sort of enjoyed it, but sort of didn't. I don't know how do you go about, with your rubric, deciding films that you kind of liked, but kind of didn't? These are films that I specifically have a hard time reviewing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm like, well, I didn't feel like a waste of time, but at the same time, it wasn't necessarily the best movie.
So. No, I agree. It's funny how this kind of happens. This is another movie, like Kingsman, that is throwing it all at the wall.
Yeah.
Throwing the whole kitchen at the wall.
I would say where they're, you know, they're throwing food at the wall. This movie is throwing every object in the kitchen at the wall.
There's a lot of times in all of this, in its genre mashing and its very referential humor, and all of these, you know, ensemble cast kind of changing point of consciousness in the movie all the time. There's a lot of this where I lose my footing, where I'm not sure what I'm supposed to be paying attention to, what is necessarily the joke, or if it's even trying to be a joke anymore. Or what genre we're in now? Like, what is the point of reference? And the movie feels a little ADD. And I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way. I mean, it's kind of fun and has a lot of energy, and it's definitely, you know, I give it an A for effort. It's trying its darndest to entertain you. There's full of bells and whistles, lots of little pop-ups, and lots of subtitles and jokes. Joke a minute. Like, you know, if you're not paying attention, you will miss a lot. You can't, you know, do the crossword puzzle while you watch this movie. And, I mean, even just to follow the plot as well. It's just somewhat convoluted.
Which it's supposed to be. I thought
it was funny enough. It definitely is paying tonal reference, I think, to a movies like Heathers came to mind, or Mean Girls, which might be kind of a slightly watered down version of Heathers.
What's the other one? It definitely is going for that John Hughes Breakfast Club thing.
John Hughes comes up a little bit in here. So it's referencing teen movies all over the place. It's referencing slasher movies. There's kind of a nod to sort of a Donnie Darko sort of elliptical a Mobius strip plotting. It's a weird one. And I think sometimes it oscillates from being kind of clever and funny to being obnoxious.
That's the thing, though, is I think sometimes it's working and sometimes it's not. And so that's why I think it's hard to gauge.
About every single time I was ready to give up on the movie and I just thought, oh, this is dumb. Then a great scene would happen.
Right.
A really inspired artistic choice or some great editing or something would bring me back in. And so I was constantly at a push and pull with this movie.
Maybe it would take even another viewing to really like to give it a fair review.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the first time watching it, I was like, and I have watched other films that are kind of oddball like it and have enjoyed or disliked and known. But this one is a very even mix. And I even think in the performances, too. Like each performer themselves. At times I'm like, yeah, and I buy this. And then at times I was like, no, I don't buy this at all. So it was a specifically, I would say the lead actress, the character was Riley Jones and played by Shane Lee Coswell, I believe.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. She's our main character, I think. And she's, you know, she's kind of like a sort of a acerbic Daria type.
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to kind of get, she's really super sarcastic and calling everyone out on their bullshit. But, you know, I think maybe is the biggest attraction of this movie is there really isn't a main character. She kind of is, but she kind of isn't.
Mm-mm.
And the movie moves around so much and it's doing so many things and it has so many like wheels spinning all the time that you never really feel very connected to anything. It just kind of, it's all just happening.
I think maybe even that could have helped. Is maybe shifting the POV a bit less.
Yeah.
But there are certain ones.
I mean, it
does
kind of come together in a way that was sort of unexpected.
At the end? Yeah.
When the puzzle sort of put itself back together, I was like, oh, okay, so there was a plan, but it was a little too late by that point.
Yeah, again, at times it's working, at times it's not. Specifically, I guess one of the, I think the part is one of the characters, the blonde girl. She's a character that kind of pays off, I think, in the movie.
And I was sort of annoyed by her character initially, because her whole thing is, and to some degree, if you really want to read into this thing, which might be more work than it's worth, you could say this is a movie about nostalgia and sort of about a generation without an identity trying to find an identity in past generations.
Right.
Specifically, this sort of the 90s is the new 80s, which is this whole 90s child thing, there's people our age who are taking over the internet and pop culture and deciding that everything that was cool was in the 90s. And that kind of has a very strong thematic presence here. And she sort of represents that the strongest, this blonde sort of cheerleader character. But I kind of felt a lot of the references from her initially were just reference for reference sake. And I was sort of annoyed by it in sort of that Gilmore Girls motor mouth way.
Well, I wonder if you really need to reference it or you can just
do it.
Just do it let people who are film savvy either sort it out or just enjoy the film as a film. Like, I don't necessarily mind sometimes, because sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Like, I don't mind that kind of dialogue choice.
No.
Because I think I think it works in Veronica Mars, but my wife recently was watching Gilmore Girls, so I saw quite a few episodes, and that show at times it worked and at times it didn't. But it is a definite dialogue choice, and it's not a wrong one.
No, I don't have a problem with stylized dialogue, but sometimes the pop culture referencing. In particular, now, like I said, in this movie, it kind of has a thematic purpose, and it kind of comes together in a way that I'm like, oh, okay, so there was a reason. But initially, I thought it was just being way too hip for its own good.
I could see that being a thing, but it does kind of come together. That's why I guess I have it. That's another reason I have a hard time kind of reviewing it, is because it did at the end kind of come together. And so that's why I was like, huh, what is this thing? But overall, I guess if you did, again, I'm going to reference back to John Who Dies at the End. If you like
I thought of that movie a lot.
If you like kind of that oddball horror-y kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Or even Donnie Darko in a way. Like, it's not as navel-gazing, but it sort of has that kind of outsider, weirdo, high school drama geek thing.
Well, even like, I mean, you could even give it a pinch of like something like Rockin' Around High School or Better Off.
Right, kind of cult high school movies.
Yeah.
Especially like Heathers and that type of stuff, those dark comedies. Or really anything by Greg Araki. I felt his presence all over this movie, especially in like the sci-fi end of the world stuff.
Which one's Greg Araki?
He made The Doom Generation and Nowhere and Totally Fucked Up and Kaboom. And he's a little bit more niche than all the people we've been talking about. But the people who like him see this movie, because whoever this director, the guy who directed Torque, Joseph Kahn, he certainly has seen a lot of Greg Araki and wanted to do his own Greg Araki movie.
Oh, well, there you go. So there's my haphazard review. Stuff happened and it was kind of good and kind of bad. Certain people should see it, and certain people would probably just be like, this is kind of weird. I don't like it.
Yeah, I could see a certain kind of high school, you know, like I said, sort of lonely, nerdy, drama geeky kind of kid getting super into this. Like, this becoming their favorite movie that they tell all their friends they have to see.
I could see it having sort of a cult appeal. I don't know if it's necessarily... And it's not one of the better ones, maybe, necessarily, but...
No, and I think it might be trying a little too hard to be that.
Yeah.
But you
give it some credit for... Yeah, no, it's mildly enjoyable, and you do give it credit for its energy. Its enthusiasm, at the least.
Yeah. What do you have for me next
week? Next week, I'm going to be having you watch the movie Frank. I caught it like a week ago or so, and I want to see what you think. So, I'm excited to hear.
Yeah, that's the movie with Michael Fassbender with a big paper mache head.
Yeah, that one.
Mm-hmm. I've heard a few things about it, so I'm excited to see it.
Okay, cool.
And if anybody has anything they want to let us know, how did your Oscar predictions go? You could email us at jabberonthedrone@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can follow us on Twitter at jabberpodcast, all one word. And you can also find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. If you're there, please leave us a review and a star rating. We're also available on the Zune and Windows Podcast Network. You can read my movie reviews that I do every week at the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can also read some of the reviews I've been providing for the Seattle-based website MacGuffin at mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. And you can read Richard's stuff that he does occasionally over at his blog, rdwally.weebly.com. And be sure to check out Brad, Amanda, and Alyssa over at the Quarter Life Crisis podcast at quartercrisis.podbean.com. And check out Leland over in Olympia, Washington at his podcast, dampercast.com. Until then, we'll talk to you next week.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.